You're listening to the Speechy Side Up podcast, and today I'm joined by an author and autism sibling, Natalie Castro. In this episode, we discuss what it was like growing up with a sibling with autism, the importance of getting autism siblings involved in speech and language therapy, and about a new book she wrote with her sister who has autism. This episode is unique because my primary guest, Natalie, is going to be talking about her sister, who is an adult with autism, named Angie. So we did get consent from Angie to talk about her during the show, and we're so happy to have Angie join in at the end of the interview for our game, so stay tuned for that. But without further ado, let's get into the show.
You're listening to the Speechy Side Up podcast. This podcast will cover the flip side of traditional speech and language therapy, so you get inspired and learn from experts in the field. Here is your host, author, AAC specialist, and matcha tea lover, Vanita Litvak. She and her guests are serving up some informative and fun topics in Speechy Side Up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Speechy Side Up podcast. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. This podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment. You can also follow along on Instagram at Speechy Side Up. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Today I'm speaking with Natalie Castro, an author and sibling of a young woman with autism. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, how are you?
I am great, and I can't wait to talk with you and learn more about you. So why don't we start by learning about who you are, what you do today, and how you got there?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I have been watching your stories and your posts, and it is so inspirational, and I'm very excited to be on here. A little bit about me. I'm 27 years old. I'm an autism sibling. I'm also a founder for Pieces of Inspiration, which is a therapy service office, and we also offer educational and supportive resources along with inspirational experiences for families of children with autism. And I've basically been inspired to not only be part of the autism community because of my relationship with my sister, Angie, who is 25 now, diagnosed with autism, but also the experiences as an autism sibling has really pushed me to be involved in a community where, you know, I get to see all different types of how autism affects not just the individuals, but families. And I have even had really great relationships with other autism siblings as well. And it's really great that we share this unique bond where I'm not only able to learn about Angie's needs, but throughout the years of volunteer work, my education, and just being so involved, I've also been able to see the needs of other children, which has inspired me to open up Pieces of Inspiration and continue working also in the autism community.
That's amazing. And when you like first approached me, I was like, oh, this is interesting. You know, it's a speech language pathology podcast, but I'm really excited to hear about your perspective as an autism sibling, because you're right. I think as therapy providers, we can sometimes be more focused on the individual or even like the parents, but the siblings, right, it's rare that we bring them in as well. So I'm really excited to hear your tips on how we can integrate that a little bit better.
Yes, of course.
So let's start with just what was it like growing up with a sibling with autism?
So growing up with Angie, we're only 18 months apart. I'm older. And it was really difficult to, one, understand the needs of Angie growing up. And it was also difficult to engage with her. And she was also nonverbal till she was 9 years old. So she used the PEC system, she used communication boards, communication devices, AAC, and it's kind of funny looking at AAC devices now as opposed to when she had it back then, where they looked like dinosaurs back then, like those big boxes. It's so funny. So, you know, I think the most difficult part was understanding how she interpreted the world and how, you know, as a sibling, growing up when you're little, it's really hard to understand the dynamics of your family, how that changes, right? So it's difficult to understand that it's not that your parents love one child more than the other, or they spend more time with the other because, you know, they don't care. It's just a matter of your sibling does require a little bit different attention, maybe not that more attention that we you know, kind of put in our heads, but they require a different type of attention. So it's really learning patience. And a lot of the times I see autism siblings, we gain a lot more independence growing up and we get that parental role very quickly, but we can also get a little lost. And that is where, you know, growing up, I've always given therapists, especially speech therapists, the perspective of being able to work not only with the parent and the individual with autism, but also their sibling as well. And the reason why I'm so super excited to be talking to you about this is because speech therapy was the reason why my sister and I developed a relationship. Because in order for me to learn about Angie, I needed to learn how to engage with her, how to communicate with her and understand her. And speech therapy was what opened that gap of communication that Angie and I had, even in her nonverbal days. For example, parallel play, taking turns, understanding that when she was having maybe a negative behavior, it was because of her lack of communication. So the speech therapist growing up, when my parents asked them if I could please sit in on speech sessions, they were more than happy to have me along. And they taught me so much. And that is the reason why Angie and I are able to have the relationship we have today, 20 plus years later, is because of speech therapists.
That is so amazing. And I have like goosebumps, and I'm definitely going to try to keep it together just like hearing your story today. But for the listeners, we had Angie on earlier just to give consent to be on this call. And the dynamic that you two have is just incredible. And so the fact that like speech therapy had a big part of that, that's just amazing. So thank you for sharing that.
Yes, of course. My goal is to not only educate on what the perspective is of an autism sibling, but also inspire therapists to gain that perspective and maybe take a shift in their approach of how they incorporate the family and not just involve the parents, but also remember that the siblings are just as much important as part of that educational piece for you guys, for family carryover.
For sure. And it seems like even in your case, it's been even more instrumental because now it's you and Angie together as a team. And you shared with me that you're even her guardian, her legal guardian. So it just makes it even more valuable because the parents, you know, they're a big part of that process, but parents get older. And, you know, if they have a sibling who's willing to, you know, kind of learn that process and support that sibling, it's really great to integrate them.
Yes. And you know what's funny? Growing up, I have a lot of autism siblings, friends who are also my age, and we kind of laugh when we go into the field of autism and we start learning about speech therapy and occupational therapy. We become the teachers for our parents. You know, growing up, it's okay, what did you learn? Natalie, what did you learn today? My parents would always ask, what did you learn in speech therapy? Like, why don't you teach us? And for me, that's where I felt I became part of that intervention, that team for Angie to progress. And there's nothing more inspiring, more fulfilling to an autism sibling than being part of that team approach to helping their developmental progress being communication. And a lot of parents take a step back and they say, oh, well, you know, I don't want to inconvenience them. I don't want them to feel like they're obligated to take care of the sibling. And what I would really love for therapists and parents to understand is that when siblings understand and when they become more, in order to teach them how to understand their sibling, you have to teach about the awareness, right? And that every single child is different. They're unique. And as a speech therapist, I mean, you're teaching all different type of techniques to all variety of clients that you have because the autism spectrum is so wide. So when you teach those communication adaptations to the sibling, they're the ones that are carrying that over at home. And you're also providing that social engagement for the individual with autism at home so they can generalize it into other settings as well. They just don't. Therapists and parents, I think, initially don't realize that the key is the sibling.
Wow. Yeah. When you put it into perspective like that, it makes a lot of sense. And I love that, you know, you and the other autism siblings, you're like, we got to teach them something. And I think that's awesome. But it's also a lot of pressure on you. Yes.
So, I mean, has that experience like always been so pleasant, or were there like hard times as well? Like, do you want to share about it? We definitely don't have to talk about it if it's not something you're comfortable with.
No, I mean, I think the hardest thing was when I had friends over. When I introduced my sister to friends, luckily in my life, I've had so many amazing friendships that they have not only understood the communication needs that my sister had, but I was also given the opportunity to teach them how to engage with my sister socially, and they were so great. But there also were times where it did affect friendships that I had, because, you know, unfortunately there were kids back then that would say, you know, your sister speaks her own language or she's weird. And, you know, as a sibling, it makes you stand out because, you know, you come back, let's say Monday morning, and everybody's there talking about, oh, my sibling and I did this, and my sibling and I, you know, went here and there. And you're realizing that there's a lot of things that you're missing out on. You know, as a family, a lot of the difficult times was, one, Angie's communication, but you start realizing that there's a lot of experiences that you didn't get to have because of, you know, your sibling's needs. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a very difficult part. And, you know, later on, you start realizing just how much more responsibility you have, and parents don't, you know, it's not that parents intend for you to have this all responsibility at a young age. It's just you just kind of pick it up on your shoulders, and you start realizing it affects you later on.
Wow. Yeah, that must have been really difficult. And thank you for sharing that, because I think that's something that, you know, we don't tend to consider as well. Again, like when we're treating an individual, we're usually treating that individual, but also just keeping in mind like how it's impacting, you know, the siblings as well. Right. And so I think, like you were saying, by having them be part of that therapy, giving them like ownership and some responsibility and building their confidence and like being around that sibling with autism, that could really help.
Right. And one of the things too is I owned a pediatric therapy office. So I understand when you have a client and you recommend for the parents to come, you know, X times in that amount of weeks. So for example, if you want them to come once or twice or even three times, that's also, you know, and the parents maybe might not be able to come as many times. It's also, we also had siblings come in with those parents, and those are hours taken away also from the sibling because of the time management, right? So some families have the have other family members that are able to care for the autism sibling while the sibling with autism goes towards their therapy sessions. But a lot of the times that doesn't happen. A lot of the times it's the autism sibling being in the waiting room with the parent. And instead of the autism sibling just sitting there and not feeling important, for a therapist to take that initiative and say, hey, you know, for example, Natalie, would you like to come in and play a game with us, even for a few minutes instead of the whole session? That really, you know, makes the sibling excited to take their sibling to therapy, because they also get to learn about their sibling.
That's such a great tip. Thank you for sharing that. And speaking of tips, I don't know, maybe you've shared a bunch already, but I'd like to know three things you think SLPs and other service providers should know about the family members of individuals with autism.
Sure. So one of them is definitely getting the sibling involved. No matter what the age gap is, whether the sibling is, you know, 10 years older, a few years younger, what matters is that the family dynamic at home involves family and siblings. So the child, if you're teaching that social, you know, you have those goals of socialization and teaching them how to use their communication in generalized environments, such as school, you know, any extracurricular activity, the place where you want to start is home with the sibling, and you want to use the sibling, which is someone that they will feel the most comfortable communicating with, using the sibling during sessions for the progress. And probably another thing is as well, a lot of the times families, you guys go to school and you are so educated on everything, and you're there, you know, families need to rely on you guys to help them and us communicate with the individual, right? And a lot of the times when I think there also needs to be an inspirational approach as well, not just, you know, here's this assignment, here's that assignment, keep doing this, keep doing that, but ensuring that, you know, after every session that you see the child, you're giving them that inspiration, even just a little comment like, you know, they did really great today. And even though they didn't, you know, do it exactly the way I wanted to teach them, I know that next time I'm going to adapt it better to teach them this way, so that way they will understand it. You know, so it's all about the language that you tell families that really get them engaged and really get them motivated to continue bringing them to therapy, because they get drained. I mean, there's so many things that, so many great ideas that therapists tell families that they can do at home. And to be honest, families are exhausted. You know, whether they're a parent that is a stay-at-home parent, or they work all day, or they have a caregiver, they're exhausted. So when you bring that approach to where you're trying to understand what their life at home is like, you're going to get a lot more communication and engagement with the families. That's a big one for me.
That's a really good suggestion. And I bet it really helps out in your personal business because you can see both sides of that.
Right. And you know, also it's teaching therapists and it's also teaching parents, right? So teaching therapists the perspective of the family home life, but also teaching families that therapists are there to help. Therapists are there as a team. And in order for therapists to truly help, the families need to be more open to telling them, look, these are my needs at home. Because a lot of the goals that speech therapists write are supposed to be helping for communication. However, it's maybe not something that the parents are having a difficult time with at home, per se. There might be more things that families can use a little help on. Like, for example, visual schedules are a big one. Okay, you know, a visual schedule would be really helpful to use at home. However, your goal for this therapy session is to work on a different type of goal. So getting that, you know, common goal together and talking about that is super important for carryover.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that, you know, from working in a private practice setting or a school-based setting, there is a difference between like the academic need versus like the medical need. And then you have like the functional need, right? But what's governing our goals, like the way that we're writing them. But I think there is a happy medium between like functionality and either medical or academic. So that was a really great point to bring up. Thank you.
Yes, of course. And between, you know, in a private practice, when clients have a speech therapist in an office setting, and then when they have a therapist in a school setting, I feel like a lot of the times there's that gap between the what each therapist is doing, because the more there is carryover, the quicker it is for that child to learn those skills, right? So maybe the private speech therapist can communicate more with the school-based SLP, because the school SLP is going to be more academic, but also carrying that over in private. So it's basically just filling that gap between the communication of the therapist and the school-based versus the private.
Definitely. Yeah. I think it's like a kind of a systematic issue in terms of like the getting the consent, but I think the more people are aware that that's the only boundary that there is, that it can be easily done, and opening up that communication, you know, quicker rather than later would be instrumental.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of our listeners work in a school-based setting. So, and you and your sister are kind of close in age, so you probably went to school around the same time, and that probably made it easy, you know, for a therapist to kind of get you involved. But are there any ideas that you have for siblings to be involved in like school-based therapy? Maybe something that they can do at home that could be carried over into the school session?
Sure. So something that I did personally when I was in third grade, Angie and I stopped going to the same school when I entered fifth grade. So I went to a private school. She continued at her public school. So during my recess time, the speech therapist would actually have me record the voice of her communication device, her AAC, that like dinosaur box that she had, just because she felt that Angie wasn't responding to the device, because it was a voice that she was, it was an unknown voice to her. Right. So the speech therapist, you know, had me come in for a few times and recorded my voice. Angie used the device more. She was more engaged to use the device because it was a voice that was known to her. Sometimes when it was recess time, the therapist would, it really depends on the school setting. So this is kind of a hard question, but if there's maybe a social setting where the sibling can even be one-on-one, or the therapist, I don't know if therapists can, if they can take the child to the playground during social time, maybe when the sibling's out there, or even just record a video for the sibling and the family at home. I'm not too aware of the speech side on the school setting, what boundaries you guys have regarding that.
Yeah, it's probably more like a case-by-case basis too. I think, you know, being in Broward County, where we're both from, it's probably right. harder because the caseloads are a lot bigger, but mm-hmm. That's not really the case either, because, you know, there can be a very remote area where they're servicing many different districts, so they have a lot of kids on their workload, caseload as well. But I like those suggestions, and I think it just gets therapists thinking about, okay, how can I do it? Because, you know, there's always a way. But maybe it's just a little bit different for your school setting versus like another school setting. I love the idea of recording on the AAC device. So that is brilliant. So thank you for sharing that.
Yes, of course. And another idea too is, let's say there's a worksheet that you're currently working on for one of the goals, maybe providing a copy of that worksheet to the parent. And that's where maybe the parent responsibility comes in when it comes to school-based, and the parent can do that worksheet with both siblings. I think that would be fun too, almost like a homework, like a, I guess like a dual homework thing that they can do together.
Oh, that's a great idea. I love that. That's a really good idea. And like you were saying, you know, parents are so busy. And so getting the sibling to maybe help out with that speech homework would be a great idea. I like that.
Yeah. When you approach it as a family bond of family time, I think maybe the response will be a little bit different than, oh my goodness, one more thing added to my list of things to do today. You know,
yeah.
Instead of saying, I want to provide you an activity, we're working on it with your child. However, we wanted to provide you this so it creates a family interaction opportunity for you guys, and the sibling can understand where their sibling with autism is at language-wise, I think would be a better approach for the families to get more motivated, because that's the thing, right? It's, they want to learn so much, and speech therapists have all these amazing ideas. However, it's that motivation, the inspiration that families sometimes need to keep going.
Yeah. Oh, I love those suggestions. So I want to talk about the importance of involving autism siblings in speech and language therapy. I feel like you've talked a lot about that. Is there anything else you want to share about that?
It could be one session, it could be two sessions, and it really just depends on how the therapist would like to structure the session with the siblings. But understand that even one or two sessions make all the difference in the world, because you're creating that spark of curiosity in the autism sibling to get to know how it is that they communicate. It's a question that autism siblings have growing up, but sometimes they're a little bit taken back or feel nervous about asking their parents, is, you know, how can I communicate? So a lot of the families do have a difficult time emotionally sometimes answering these questions, to where therapists can step in and really just give the answers. And like I said, spark that curiosity to have the siblings want to learn more about it.
That's great. And I love your suggestion of just kind of starting out small. I think that's a very attainable goal, and then kind of building up from there. It may be scary inviting a sibling in. Maybe you'll feel like your student or your client will be distracted, but just right. starting small and then realizing, hey, it's not so bad. And I do like some of your suggestions, like maybe bringing them for part of the session, like the fun part, so that the autism sibling does feel special and like that they're getting to join in on the treatment as well.
Right. Even if the sibling just held flashcards and you had the other, your client answering the questions. I mean, it's just little roles. And also what I loved telling the therapist that, you know, worked at Pieces of Inspiration was if you're having a difficult time, and also it does depend on the age range, but if you're having a difficult time engaging both the siblings in a controlled setting and you're having a difficult time with, you know, doing an activity and having distraction or, you know, not having compliance, imagine how the families feel.
Yes. Wow. That's so really important to put into perspective.
Yes. So it's just something that I like to make them aware of. And maybe that's also a learning opportunity for both the therapist and the family.
Oh, I love that. What, as SLPs, and I'm probably overgeneralizing, but as an SLP myself and being kind of type A, like not having control in a session can be very scary, mm-hmm. but you're right. We need to empathize with the families and see like what they're going through as well. So thanks for that suggestion.
Of course.
Now, I really am so excited to talk about a book that you and your sister wrote, and you were part of that editing process, guiding her through that and helping her to get it published. So it's called Angie's Mouse and Friends, and it's a story and coloring book. So tell me more about the book and like why you both wrote it.
So Angie actually started to draw before she even spoke. She drew beautifully starting at the age of 6 years old. And combined with speech and art therapy is the reason why Angie started talking. She started expressing herself in her drawing. So when she was 6 years old, she would put on, I feel so old saying this, is VHS tapes, and rewind all the images. And Disney's what really sparked her interest, but she would rewind the images. And from the TV on paper, she would draw. She never traced in her life. If she wanted to learn how to draw something, she Googled it. I mean, when she was nonverbal and the way she drew and she used drawing as expression, and we started getting into her into art classes and art therapy and combining it with her speech therapy and even occupational therapy is when her language really came. But so being that she's 25 years old, now we start talking about, you know, I studied early intervention, early childhood, middle school, high school. So growing up with Angie and only being 18 months apart, it's been, you know, you get to a point where like, great, you know, we figured this part out in her life. We figured out how to teach her, you know, things to take care of her self-care, her health, her food, you know, all these things, all the stages in life. And then you get to the adult and you're like, okay, starting all over again. So it's a constant race. Right? That we go through. And when I said, okay, what job opportunity can she have? What can she do that she feels she has a purpose in life? You know, how can I bring something to where she can create, she can do what she loves, but also gain an income from it. So, you know, with her drawings and her paintings, she would draw birthday cards for kids at my office. And one day we were having lunch with a family friend and she goes, why don't you ever make a coloring book? And I was taken back. I go, I have no idea why I never thought of that idea. So that's where it came out. And all the characters that are in the book are inspired by clients at Pieces of Inspiration, children with autism and their siblings.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh. I can't wait to see it. That's so special. Do you think Angie would be interested in coming on and talking about it too?
Maybe yeah, when you guys sure.
talk, and I'm sure you guys have your little, you know, spiel when you guys are talking about the book. So I'll let you guys talk.
Yes, of course. Okay. So Angie, I have a question for you. So for the book, Angie's Mouse and Friends, where did you draw all of the characters?
I drew it on the Angie's Mouse and Friends book.
On Angie's Mouse and Friends book, but where did you draw them? Where are all the characters that you draw, that you drew? On your what?
What?
On your
iPad.
On your iPad, right?
Right.
Okay. And then who are the characters in the book?
All the kids.
Mm-hmm. And their
siblings.
And their siblings, right?
Siblings.
And Angie actually had her first book signing this past Saturday.
Angie, that's incredible. Where was it?
Where was the book signing?
The book signing at the Stanley Book.
At the
preschool.
At the preschool. So Angie had her first book signing at the preschool where she, when she was first diagnosed with autism, she attended Bowdoin Preschool in Davie.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I actually worked there as well. So Bowdoin's very close to our hearts. And Angie, how much were you selling the books for at the book signing?
All of it.
How much money did you sell it for?
$5.
So we wanted
$5.
$5. So you can find the book on Amazon, but we created special books just for that event. We created the book a little larger because a lot of our kiddos who are from ages 3 to 5 have a really difficult control of their fine motor. So we wanted to make it longer for them since they have a little bit wider range of motion when it comes to coloring. And Angie donated 20% of whatever sales that she got back to the preschool.
Wow, that's amazing, Angie. I cannot wait to get my hands on this book. And so you said that it's on Amazon. And where can everybody go to if they want to like get the book, learn more information about both of you?
Sure. So they can go to www.piecesofinspiration.com. And on the website, I have all of my social media links to Instagram, Facebook, and there's also a blog on there. One of the blogs is talking about Angie's book. Angie, did you have fun drawing the book?
Yes.
So Angie's actually creating a series of coloring books. So which one are you working on next? Maybe we can give a special sneak peek to Vanita's audience. What type of characters are going to be in the next coloring book?
Fairies.
Ooh, I love fairies. I cannot wait.
This is my favorite book. My favorite book is Mrs. Frisbee and the Rust of Nim.
So mice are your favorite characters, right?
Yeah.
Can you say why though? Why is a mouse your favorite? Hold on. Why is a mouse your favorite character?
The mouse character is.
Who's your favorite Disney character? That's a mouse.
A mouse, but not.
Okay, but who's the main one? Who's the main Disney character that's your favorite?
Mickey Mouse.
Oh, I love Mickey Mouse too. Do you guys get to go to Disney very often?
Yeah. Oh, I have to go back after move to Utah.
That's right. You're moving to Utah, which I'm sad now because we both live so close together. And I was like, I can't wait to meet these two. But you'll have to come back after you move.
Really? I have to go back to Orlando, Florida.
So fun fact. We went as a family probably almost every weekend when I was in middle school because that was that was the only place where Angie really loved to go. So it was a lot of fun going almost every weekend.
That is so cool. I'm kind of jealous.
And what's your dream job, Ange? Who do you want to draw for? Who do you want to draw for?
The children.
The children, but where? In
Disney.
In Disney, that's right.
Well, I have a strong faith that you're going to be able to do that. I'm looking up your book right now on Pieces of Inspiration, right? That's where I could find it.
Yes. And you can also just go on Amazon.com and look and search Angie's Mouse and Friends.
Okay, cool. Oh, that's so exciting. Well, thank you so much, Angie. Was there anything else that you wanted to tell me?
No. So do you want to talk about the sequel name?
No, right we're talking about Angie's Mouse and Friends. That's a topic that you and I can talk about later, okay?
Okay.
So why don't we jump into our game now? It's a little getting to know you game.
Yeah, sure. Angie and I can jump on.
Okay, perfect. So I'm curious, are you goofy or graceful?
Graceful?
I'm goofy.
No.
Angie, it's a joke. Don't worry. I'm very literal here. No, not goofy the character, Angie. Like goofy, like I'm silly.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. You do seem pretty goofy.
I am Disney princess or fairy.
Yeah, she wants to be a princess or a fairy. Okay.
That makes sense that you're graceful because they're very graceful. Okay, what about, do you feel like you're more soft-spoken or outspoken?
Man, spoken.
You think soft-spoken for you?
Soft-spoken for me?
I think you're pretty outspoken, Ange. You pretty much say what's on your mind.
Same.
I think we're pretty much both outspoken.
That's good, though. You know, that's why probably one of the reasons that you guys are, you know, doing such a great job making such big waves in the field of autism, too. So that's awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Wavy voice. Wave.
Oh, like a wavy voice. Yes, you're right, Ange.
Like
a piece. That was a good description. Soft-spoken voices are very wavy.
Yes.
I love that. Okay, how about, do you feel like you're very focused or do you feel like your head is in the clouds?
Focus.
Me, I'm a little in between.
You guys are a good, like, mix together.
Oh, yes, we can't be more opposite, I'm telling you.
So this is more of a personal question, but do either of you have, like, boyfriends or girlfriends?
So I have a boyfriend. We're actually long distance because he's a pilot.
Oh, okay.
But him and I, we met when we were 15 on a cruise.
Aww.
I will have my boyfriend.
You'll find the right guy?
Yes.
Why don't you tell her what your right guy looks like?
The right guy looks like in a blonde hair and gray eyes. And this in the top is blue and the V's is yellow.
Yeah, he has to wear blue and yellow sleeves.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that because of somebody you've seen before or just somebody you've imagined?
I've never seen him.
He's in your dreams.
Oh, yeah, and he has to have a six-pack.
Oh, he definitely has to have a six-pack.
Your dream is to find the right guy, right?
Yeah.
So in Utah, I actually bought a home, but I'm creating an adaptive apartment downstairs in the basement for Angie both of us, I can have like my own space, she'll have her own space. So that's kind of my next project, is to kind of create a system where, you know, I'm able to do my thing, she's able to do her. So it's going to be interesting over there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm so excited for you guys though. All right, let's do one more fun one. So tell me, what is your favorite thing to eat, both of you?
What's your favorite thing, Ange?
My favorite thing to eat is tuna steak.
Ooh. She likes ahi tuna steak. She's a little, she has me make it at least once a week. We go to the store, she picks it out, and I make it.
Yum. So do you like sushi too, or just the ahi tuna steak?
Tuna steak.
And sushi, right? Sushi. You love sushi. I have to say my favorite food is sushi.
Me too. I would say that's definitely my favorite food too. And we'll have to talk about your favorite places down here since you guys live in South Florida too. But this has been a blast. Thank you so much, Angie, for coming on. Thank you, Natalie, for sharing your story and, you know, sharing all of those amazing tips. So I'm sure you're going to have people reaching out to you to connect with you and kind of learn more. But thanks again. I hope to talk with you guys soon, and I'm excited to follow along on your journey to Utah.
Yes, thank you so much for having us. It's really such a blessing when there's people who want to hear the perspective of an autism sibling. So I greatly appreciate it. And, you know, speaking from autism siblings, and I'm sure many other ones that I have connected with over the years, that we definitely thank you guys, and the more awareness we bring for the whole family dynamic, the better practices that we're really going to have for individuals with autism. So thank you so much for having me.
Did something in this episode really resonate with you? Want to know what other SLPs thought about it too? While you might feel isolated in your work setting, every week you're tuning in with thousands of other SLPs. Crazy, right? You can connect with some of these other SLPs on the private Speechy Side Up Pod Facebook group, so you don't have to feel like you're doing this alone. We just ask that you leave a positive review before you request to join. This helps to spread the word and get more interviews with experts in our field. Thank you for listening, and I hope to see you on Facebook.